Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. With me now is New York State Senator Zellner Myrie. He's in the news for having been handcuffed, and he says pepper sprayed at one of the protests over the weekend. He also has policy responses to some of the underlying issues. Senator Myrie is a freshman Democrat, one of the progressives who won their primaries in 2018 over members of the so-called Independent Democratic Caucus, remember them, which had helped Republicans maintain control of the New York State Senate until most of them were ousted in Democratic primaries in 2018. His district covers parts of Brownsville, Crown Heights, East Flatbush, Gowanus, Park Slope, Prospect Heights, Prospect Lefferts Gardens, South Slope, and Sunset Park. Senator Myrie, thanks for making some time for us today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be with you, Brian.
And before we get to the larger issues, can you describe for our listeners what happened to you that wound up with you being handcuffed and pepper sprayed?
Yeah, so Friday night, I went down to the protest along with Assemblymember Diana Richardson, one in solidarity, but two in my capacity as an elected official and someone who has relationships with law enforcement, was hoping to be a liaison between the protesters and the officers. And I wore a neon green shirt with my name and title on the back, precisely to de-escalate if things got out of control. I was complying with orders to move back. In fact, I was trying to help move other protesters back, and suddenly the cops surged forward. They used their bicycles as weapons, hit me in the back, hit me in the legs. I started to get pushed and shoved, and as I'm trying to protect those behind me, I turn around and say, look, we're complying with your orders. There's no need to get physical. I was pepper sprayed and then subsequently put in handcuffs.
Do you think the street protests should continue at this point or move to different kinds of action? I see some breaking news that just in the last few minutes, Mayor de Blasio has extended the 8 p.m. curfew, which takes effect tonight, through Sunday night.
You know, I think we are in a really pivotal moment in this city where we can choose between community and chaos, as Dr. King told us right before he was assassinated. And I'm wary to tell people how to protest. I am wary of focusing on the what, and instead I think we should be focusing on the why. The common refrain in all of these protests of no justice, no peace is a two-part equation, and we often focus on the latter half of that, and there's no peace, and we focus on the unrest. But protests are meant to be disruptive, and they're meant to make us feel uncomfortable, and they're meant to spur us into action. And I think the overwhelming majority of people that have taken to the streets in New York are trying to do just that. And so I would encourage them to peacefully continue to do so.
Here's a clip of Governor Cuomo yesterday saying he supports the protests and the protesters, but worrying about the other threat to people's health and safety we've all been concerned about these last few months. Here's the governor.
We just spent 93 days limiting behavior, closing down, no school, no business, thousands of small businesses destroyed. People will have lost their jobs. People wiped out their savings. And now, mass gatherings with thousands of people in close proximity? 1 week before we're going to reopen New York City? What sense does this make?
So, Senator, what about COVID and social distancing? I don't see much emphasis from anyone on maintaining 6 feet distance in these protests. Is it worth risking a new surge of the virus by not emphasizing that?
I think it's a legitimate concern, Brian. I will note that I represent Central Brooklyn, which has been one of the epicenters within the epicenter that is New York City. I live a couple of blocks from Kings County Hospital in SUNY Downstate. I represent Brookdale and Kingsburg Jewish. we have felt the impacts of COVID-19 at a disparate level here in black and brown communities. And so I empathize very much with us trying to stem this pandemic and to keep it at the levels that we've been able to flatten it to. But I would urge folks to consider why, during a global pandemic, people still feel the need to take to the streets. What might move a person to move out when we still have this virus amongst us to say, I want to communicate how much injustice is happening? And so I think, again, it is incumbent upon us to focus on correcting that injustice that would move an individual to want to participate even in the midst of COVID-19.
Listeners, we can take some phone calls for State Senator Zelda Myrie of Brooklyn, 646-435-7280. Our phones yesterday were only for people who went out to protests yourselves over the weekend. Today, we, of course, still invite you to call in, but also anyone else, too. Where do we go from here, in your opinion? How does real change come to New York and the United States after the uprising in the streets, or anything else you would like to say or ask? 646-435-7280. Did you see the instance yesterday where Chief of Department of the NYPD, Terrence Monaghan, took a knee with protesters? I wonder where you think that sits on the scale from empty gesture to meaningful sign of NYPD behavior change, at least toward the protesters themselves.
Yeah, I was able to see it, and I think it is a welcome gesture. I think as it pertains to quelling unrest and building trust, certainly in a volatile situation, I think it's important that people see a high-level law enforcement officer show that sort of solidarity. I will say, though, that that is certainly not sufficient, and people aren't protesting to have signs of solidarity from law enforcement. They're protesting to end brutality. And I think until there is accountability, until people see that there are consequences for police misconduct, while these gestures are welcome, they will not be sufficient.
And I see you've got some initiatives in Albany. You can shout out whichever ones you think are most important for the structural longer-term change that you think needs to take place. I know one of the things that I want to ask you about is the so-called Section 50A, which keeps police conduct records hidden from the public. But where would you start with what you're promoting at the state legislature level?
Brian, I think we would start exactly where you just mentioned. Having 50A, and for some of our listeners who aren't familiar, it is a section of the civil rights law that protects personnel records for civil servants. And the interpretation of that law by this current administration and by the courts has been such that you can protect an officer's disciplinary records behind this law, so that if you have been the victim of police misconduct, you cannot see if that individual has a history or propensity to use excessive force or to do whatever it was done to you. And so I think until we repeal 50A so that these disciplinary records can be made available, there's going to continue to be a lack of trust. But I think we can have an honest discussion about how we can rectify the misconduct, but we can't start that conversation until we're able to see it.
Anything else at the legislative level?
Yeah, so I think we everything is as it pertains to community relations with law enforcement, it is an issue of trust. And because we haven't seen consequences, our interactions are fraught with mistrust. And so in addition to 50A, I think it's important that for someone who has conducted themselves in a way that dishonors the badge, they should be going before a neutral arbiter to determine the nature of that misconduct. As it currently stands, disciplinary proceedings go before a judge that is on the NYPD payroll. And I have a bill in the legislature that would take that out of that setting into a neutral setting to where all the other city agencies hold their disciplinary hearings so that we can have confidence in what those disciplinary records say. I think it's important for us to get statistics on law enforcement Right now, we don't know the racial demographics of how misdemeanors are given out. The courts are not required to keep such information. And so I think we need to do that as well. And I'd lastly say we haven't had a prohibition on racial profiling in a way that allows for you to be, you can get monetary damages if you were the subject of it. There's a bill in the legislature discussing that as well. And so I think there are a host of things that we can push to. I'm optimistic that the legislature is going to be taking some action on many, if not all, of these in short order. And so that's what I'm going to be continuing to push for.
Akasha on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hello, Akasha.
Hi. So I'm kind of lost as to who I need to speak with, and I'm glad that it's a state representative. But there was apparently a permitted, approved block party on Ludlow Street on Sunday with police being there. They were interacting with everybody. Nobody seemed to have a problem. There were no masks, no social distancing. And it's incredibly frustrating that something like this could happen, I guess, sanctioned by the city or the state or whomever, when people are literally dying all over this country because of a pandemic, and people have to be reminded that Black Lives Matter. And I don't know what to do. And I've tried, like, I've reached out to the president of the Manhattan Borough president, and I sent emails, but I don't know if they're going unread, and I'm very frustrated as
are
to why that even happened.
You're saying that separate from the protests, there was a permitted
yeah.
block party on Ludlow Street?
There was a block party with a DJ and a car show. They were selling all of the drinks. Open containers were fine. There were like hundreds of people on my block on Sunday.
Akasha, thank you very much. And I know it's not your district, Senator, but is this something that you're either aware of or could help prevent, presuming you don't want that to happen again?
I appreciate that question, because my understanding was we weren't doing block party permits, and that the city had suspended that not only for May, but for June as well. And so I am really surprised to hear that this was approved. And I think that that's certainly something that we have to go back and look into, because we don't want that happening anywhere else in the city.
And the caller also said she wants to make sure that people hear the message that Black Lives Matter, but she also doesn't know what to do. So this, to me, implies the question again of social distancing and the protests. If the mayor just issued an 8 p.m. curfew for every night through Sunday, that presumably is because he anticipates that the protests are going to continue for a number of days yet, or at least that's a possibility. And I wonder if elected officials like yourself and others in leadership positions of various kinds who, you know, are very much for the goals of the protests need to do more, or think you should do more, to try to get these protests organized in a socially distanced way, because you know who's going to be the victims disproportionately.
That's right, Brian, and I certainly would not argue against that. I think it's important for us to ensure that these are conducted in a way that that is socially distant, and that doesn't increase the risk of contraction of COVID-19. I think it would be a sad next step for us to have a spike in the virus as a result of these protests. And so I'm willing certainly to have a conversation about how to speak to that notion. You know, I will note that when we saw the enforcement on social distancing by the NYPD, the numbers showed that it was done disproportionately against people of color. And so we come back again to the very reason that we are protesting, and that is to correct the misconduct that has been visited upon our communities for decades, and really to speak to the brutality that has been in the soil of this country since its inception. So I am willing to have that conversation, and I think it's important for us to make sure that people are being safe while expressing what they feel about the brutality.
Interesting. Since we were on this point, here's a caller, Scott in Suffolk County, who I think wants to say he was at a vigil in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg, in McCarran Park, and they were social distancing.
Yes.
Scott, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello. I just want to thank the senator for putting the words of and the energy and the message of the protests entirely eloquently and profoundly. That's exactly how I think a lot of people feel. I just wanted to talk about how that particular protest I was at yesterday was extremely peaceful. It started out with a prayer vigil, and then around a little after 8 o'clock, and you know, a very long moment of silence, and then around 8 o'clock it became a march. And I didn't at one point see somebody not wearing a mask. I always felt that people were 6 feet apart from each other. And I think that comes from not only people are starting to find the true message and the point of the protest, and perhaps the violence should not be directed towards poor communities or, you know, mom and pop businesses and you know, communities of color, but more towards, you know, corporations and such. But I think that now as the movement is continuing, there's a lot of good information online as well on social media. People who are organizing these grassroots movements are spreading the information. They're saying, you know, everything I see on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, what have you, people are emphasizing the 6 foot social distancing is important. And maybe the people who are becoming very serious and you know, this isn't just a one day thing. This is a fight for a very long time. And I think that for us to continue to do that, we do have to absolutely maintain 6 feet very seriously.
Scott, thank you.
That's just what I saw personally. I know that it's not like that everywhere else.
Was it spontaneous in McCarran Park, or were people kind of making announcements to remember to stand 6 feet apart and that kind of thing?
It was just, I think internally everyone understood. I mean, just this is my own personal experience, right? Maybe further up or further behind me, it was different, but I never felt too close to anybody. I take it very seriously. I live actually with my mother's is in an at-risk group, right? Immunocompromised group of people. So mm-hmm. I take it very seriously, and it took me all weekend to decide to go out and protest. But as the senator said, it's, you know, we're tired of the injustice, and it's, you know, why would I go out and do something with an immunocompromised mother, right? It's because it's so important. It's so important for us to go out and do it.
Scott, thank you so much. And wow, Senator, how about that commitment and that raising his voice at the same time to do it the right way? And honestly, I think the science indicates that if you're chanting, your droplets are going to travel more than 6 feet.
That's right. And, you know, I appreciate the caller for expressing his passion. We're learning how to do this along with everything else in the society during COVID-19. We have had to adjust the way that we work. We've had to adjust the way that we interact. And we certainly will have to learn how to adjust the way that we protest. And I think as we go along and as we, you know, remember, I think we're about a week, if that much, into consecutive nights of protesting, I think we will learn and we will adjust and we will adapt. But what we're seeing, like what the caller just said, I think is a lot of raw emotion and one that none of us hopes would lead to endangering the health of more New Yorkers.
Let me get one more caller in here as we begin to run out of time for this segment. Patrick in Yorkville. Hi, Patrick. We have about 30 seconds for you.
Hi. I just want to applaud Senator Myrie for his calm after being pepper sprayed. He's showing a lot of, you know, calmness. I appreciate that. And thanks, Brian. Real quickly, I just want to know how we can shift the conversation to police unions. They incited violence on social media by calling their members to use batons, and they donate to so many elected so-called progressive officials. They have lobbying and political power that created 50A and got it to pass. How do we make their money as toxic as fossil fuel money, and how do we hold them a lot more responsible?
Senator?
I think that is a really excellent point. And the source of political power for the opposition to criminal justice reform writ large, and more specifically to police accountability, has come from the unions. And as we saw, really just despicable behavior. I think they have done a good enough job in the past couple of days to show the public why they have an inordinate influence over the process. I mean, they have fought against the implementation of 50A, but then revealed publicly private information about the mayor's daughter. And so I think as we continue to see the momentum shift and the public opinion shift, where we need to hold people accountable, those who are beholden to those forces are going to find it much less tenable to do so and to be on the side of the people in this fight.
The mayor's daughter, Kiara, for those who haven't heard, having been arrested at one of the protests, along with a lot of other people. So kind of to the larger point there, as a last question, Mayor de Blasio got elected in part on police reform, and he says despite the incidents of police violence that have been documented in the last week and a few COVID-19 enforcement instances before that, that he and his police commissioners have brought structural change, different kinds of training, better community involvement, other things during his tenure, and the big picture of meaningful change should not be lost for the trees. How much do you agree with the mayor on that?
I would say that the demonstrations in the past couple of days has showed that not to be true, that there is still much to be desired by way of police accountability. And while we appreciate, you know, to the mayor's credit, the central abolition of the misuse of stop and frisk and speaking to many of the progressive needs on this front, we clearly have a feeling in this city, and it is those of us both who just moved here and those of us like myself who were born and raised here, those of us who are in the capacity that represent neighborhoods that have been over-policed, there is a strong sentiment that there is no consequence for bad behavior. And that is why people are taking to the streets, and that is why we need the response. You know, we are in a historic time, and we sanitize past protests, but we forget that those were unpopular in their time. The Gallup polls that were taken in the 1960s, majority of Americans said that this did harm to the civil rights movement, that it hurt the chances of seeing things come to pass legislatively. But now we lift that up and we lionize those folks because we know they did the right thing. And I believe we are in a similar moment in this country and in this city. And we will not be judged by public opinion, but instead by what is the right thing to do.
State Senator Zellner Myrie of Brooklyn, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.